You're listening to the Fantasy 411 Podcast. Now here are Mike Ciano and Corey Schwartz.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to the MLB.com Fantasy 411 Podcast Show. Mike Ciano, along with Corey Stats Schwartz, the crew on the other side of the glass. Let's do some housekeeping before we get to our topics for today, shall we, Corey?
Let's.
Okay. Fantasy411.mlblogs.com is where the goose brings you all the info. We're getting close to two-star pitcher stuff.
Next week.
Now, we all know who the two-star pitchers are in week one.
Actually, whoever are the Cardinals and Cubs aces are not two-star pitchers.
Right. they get an extra day of the season, yeah.
And they get the extra day off during the week.
That's what I meant, right. Yeah. So besides that, you'll have the two-star pitchers on the blog from the Goose. You have all the tout results from the drafts from this past weekend on the blog as well. Fred Zinke still killing it each day, each week on the blog and on the website. So make sure you look for Fred's stuff. He's at Fred Zinke MLB. Corey is at Shortstops. I'm at the Cap 23. Goose is at Zach MLB, and the general account is at Fantasy 411. And somebody just shut off the TV in the studio, if you heard that.
That was a nice little sound.
We'll get to some of your Twitter questions, and we're going to talk a little bit about a Dan O'Dowd. Speaking of new additions to the team, Fred Zinke's been doing a great job this year, but Dan O'Dowd, now an analyst on the network and a columnist on MLB.com. How about that?
Fantastic.
He's very good. He's very he's insightful. He really likes it. You can tell, like, there's an energy there. So I'm really liking the roster of former general managers in baseball media these days.
I'll tell you what, the guys that we've had, you know, the former GMs that we've had on MLB.com over the years, Fred Clair was fantastic.
Yep.
Jim Duquette is fantastic.
He is, and he'll be joining the show all season long.
Yep. So, you know, the thing is, these are baseball guys.
Yep.
This is what they like to do. So, if they're not working for a club, they're talking baseball and talking about players wherever they are and whatever job they're doing. And that's fun, man. That's just fun.
Absolutely. So we'll go over his story column. He did a post called The Five Toughest Roster Dilemmas This Spring.
Mm.
Interesting stuff. Intriguing. And obviously this has fantasy impact. Let's be honest.
Yeah.
We'll talk about that. We'll talk about tout. We got some injury news to go over, some signings, some news out of some clubs. So with all that said, where do you want to start, my friend?
Wherever you say to start, because if we're going to talk baseball for an hour, and what could be wrong with that?
Well, my little sheet that I wrote out says O'Dowd, so let's go there.
Okay.
And it's actually, as we record this podcast, it is the lead story on MLB.com, so it's apropos, as they say. So he listed, I think, five teams and picked a couple of things going on, and not necessarily the guy versus another guy for the spot. It could be, it's just a team thing. So the most glaring one, I think, in all of baseball right now is fairly obvious, and that's Chris Bryant.
Mm-hmm.
Is Joe Maddon pushing Theo to let him break camp with him? We know that if they can just wait 2 weeks where they don't even play 14, 15 games, what are they really losing? And Joe Sheehan did a great newsletter on this, by the way.
And Mike Ciano did a great riff on this yesterday in a staff meeting.
Thank you, but that was not recorded anyway. I'm pro team. Sometimes I'm pro player. I call it as I see it.
Yeah.
So this one, I think they should leave him down they're leaving him down for all the right reasons. It's only 2 weeks. We're not talking about All-Star break.
Well, again, you know, let's put aside the financial aspect of it and just look at what's best for the Cubs right now. When they signed John Lester and et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, their World Series odds spiked and everybody was rushing to Vegas and betting on the Cubs. I don't see it.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, look, no offense. You know, they've got Lester and Arrieta at the top of the rotation, but the end of their rotation is very shaky.
Edwin Jackson's having a great spring.
When he can get there. Their bullpen still has a lot of question marks. They've got an unbelievable batch of young talent, but that's still very much unproven. You know, Chris Bryant, for all the power and all that, could strike out 200 times if he was an everyday player.
Yep.
So this is a much, much improved team.
Of course.
To quote the tuna, let's put away the anointing oils,
nice.
All right?
Good job.
My concern with Bryant is the strikeout rate, the fact he hasn't played a lot of third base this spring. And if they were realistically World Series contenders on day one, yes, you put your best players in the lineup. But to me, they're more like a wild card contender type of team. And I think a little bit of caution is okay there. Clearly, they opened up third base for him by dealing Valbuena. That's not a question.
Right.
But what's the difference over 2 weeks between...
And again, it's not 15 games.
Right.
We're talking about maybe 10 games?
Right. You know, 11? Over 2 weeks, what's the difference between a platoon of Michael and Arizmendi Alcantara and Chris Bryant? maybe one win.
Maybe. Right, and then the people say, well, what if they finish out of the wild card by one game? But that's under the assumption that Chris Bryant helps you win.
You can point to all those other
exactly.
factors.
Exactly. So it's listen, it's great fodder for talk shows, for this podcast, for the website, for fans, all that. It's phenomenal. It's got people talking baseball, and there's never anything wrong with that.
And just one final thought.
Yeah, sure.
Because I know you were starting to move on.
No, I wasn't really.
Let's not question that the Cubs are doing what they think is in the best interest of the Cubs, all right? And if the Cubs thought it was the best thing for them on opening day to have Chris Bryant playing third base, mm-hmm. make no mistake, he'd be playing third base. I mean, look at last year, how quickly they brought up Soler and mm-hmm. Baez mm-hmm. and Alcantara, when a lot of people were like, oh my gosh, they're bringing up Baez. If they think Bryant will help them win right now and they think that'll be a difference maker for them in the second half and into the postseason, he will be their opening day third baseman. If they have reasons to have doubts, whatever those reasons may be, then he won't be. It's that simple. So let's not question that the Cubs are doing what they think is best for the Cubs.
Also, you know, take into account his defense, and now that they're talking about putting him in the outfield. So, you know, is he a major league third baseman on opening day? Just defensively.
Right.
You know, it's the same thing with Tomas that we've been talking about all spring. Also, O'Dowd mentions Javier Baez along with Bryant. Mm-hmm. You know, he whiffed 41.5% of his plate appearances last year, and I took that right out of Dan's column here. So he would have led the league by a wide margin if he would have qualified. So a lot of strikeouts out there, but this is what they're dealing with. You know, so, I mean, if you had to handicap it right now, what do you think about Bryant and Baez?
Bryant in Iowa for 2 weeks or maybe a month.
Mm-hmm.
Baez, second base at Wrigley Field.
Okay.
Or I guess they're opening at Busch
Now,
State.
And as far as value on draft day, now you've done a bunch of drafts. You were, you're in mixed tout. You're in an interesting position in a new league that you're joining, that you're drafting in tonight, where you're going to be targeting the future stars. Where are these guys? Obviously, Bryant's a no-brainer, we know, but where do you put Baez?
We've never talked about that. Bryant is flying up the rankings.
Yeah.
And you know, what's interesting to me, you know, in NFBC leagues, he's starting to go into the fourth round, the third round. I mean, crazy, crazy stuff. But in Tout Wars, I thought, for the most part, the room was actually pretty reasonable on him. I think he might have gone for $13 or $14. I haven't memorized the rosters yet, but I think Scott Swayne got him for $13 or $14, which I think is very, very reasonable mm-hmm. for what he might bring as a power source, but the risks of when he might start to bring it and at what expense to the, you know, the batting average or the OBP, because Tout's an OBP league. So I thought he was being valued fairly. Same with Baez. I mean, potential power speed combination, but a playing time concern because of the strikeouts. And Tout is an OBP league. Baez is an potential OBP killer.
Right.
I kind of think of Baez as an sort of a prototype or an early shape Mark Reynolds.
Hmm.
You know, who can give you a ton of power, mm-hmm. surprise you with the speed from time to time, but you have to be willing to accept a really brutal batting average or OBP. The difference is Reynolds was a third baseman.
Right.
Baez is a second baseman.
Corner versus middle.
Where the bar is high, where the bar is lower. So, you know, he's definitely a worthwhile player to have, but you just have to offset him with other batting average guys or OBP guys, as may be.
All right, let's stick in Chicago. And this is, you know, very timely because he went out last night and just dominated, and that was Rodon.
Yeah.
9 strikeouts, I think, struck out the side in the first inning. You know, he has benefited, or he is he will benefit from Chris Sale. Is today Monday? He will benefit from Chris Sale, you know, starting the season on the DL. And this looks like a situation to me, and again, please read this story because you get who the player is and then Dan O'Dowd's verdict on it. I don't want to read the story to you on the show right now.
This is our verdict.
But Rodon, you know, if he can prove that this is no fluke this spring and that he can handle the major league level early, he may never see the minors again.
See, I think Rodon versus Bryant is an apples and oranges comparison
mm-hmm.
because Bryant, if he's with the Cubs, he's the everyday third baseman. Rodon, they can use him out of the bullpen.
You can move him around.
You know, his thing right now is that he's basically a fastball slider pitcher. They've been getting him to work on his changeup a lot more. I think he threw 3 or 4 of them yesterday and then threw a bullpen session afterwards and said he threw another 10 or 12. But as a two-pitch pitcher, he's really not going to make it as a starter. He needs a third pitch.
Sure.
He can work out of the bullpen,
mm-hmm.
perfect that changeup as a short, you know, middle reliever, long guy, whatever it may be, And then when he's ready, he can make the transition to starting at some point during the season or maybe down the road. I think it's a very different thing because you can move use pitchers in different roles. So if I had to pick one to open the season on the roster, I would pick Rodon.
Yeah. And I mean, you know, the Reds sound like they're kind of thinking the same way with Cingrani.
Mm-hmm. Using him as a reliever.
Granted, Rodon's in the rotation, Cingrani's not. We know that already. But at least they feel that you get that flexibility. And honestly, you know, you can maximize not necessarily the innings, but you can maximize the length of use.
And the leverage.
And the leverage, right. So, yeah. If you feel like you're going to be a contender, which the White Sox certainly feel,
oh yeah,
wouldn't you find value in having Rodon available in September and October?
Right.
And there's a guy coming up next. It ties into it a little bit as well, in Taiwan Walker. You know, where again, if it's a bat, you just roll him out, you let the guy hit. With a pitcher, especially a young one, or one coming off an injury, or both, you got to be careful, especially if you want. It goes back to Felix a couple of years ago, very early on in his career, maybe his first full season, where we all knew he was going to be great, but the baseball discussion, not the fantasy discussion, the baseball discussion was, well, if the Mariners feel like they can compete, they're not going to have their best pitcher in September.
You
remember
know,
that whole thing?
Yeah, and look.
And this might have been coming off the Verducci effect.
How about discussion? A couple of years ago, the Nationals shut down Strasburg in the middle of a pennant race?
That's true, too.
But here's the thing.
It's an even better reminder.
I am a big believer in caution when it comes to pitchers. Mm-hmm. You know, monitoring pitch counts, monitoring innings, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And especially, like you said, Walker, a guy who's had some injuries and is very young. But here's the thing. 30 years later, after all the data we have and all the research that's been done, and all of the, you know, biomechanical laboratories, and we hook the guys up with the lights and they simulate. We have the same percentage of pitchers going on the DL as we did 30 years ago. We haven't figured this out.
And we lost two good ones this spring.
We're nowhere near figuring this out. So I'm not saying that's an excuse to throw caution to the wind, but it makes me think that if you have a well-thought-out plan, you can use the guy and be cautious. It doesn't mean you have to shut him down. It doesn't mean you pull him out, you know, like the Indians did 2 years ago with Danny Salazar. Mm-hmm. He'd throw 82 pitches. They'd pull him out of the game.
Right.
You know, the number is different for every guy. So if I'm the Mariners, Walker's in the rotation, no question, because he's probably good enough right now to be their number two or maybe number three starter. You know, we use him as the fifth starter, so we skip him.
Right.
You know, if we got a big lead, we do a five and dive. Coming out of the All-Star break, we push him all the way back and use him only as our fifth starter. And you kind of put him on a 170-inning, you know, schedule as opposed to, again, I'm not saying anybody was right or wrong. I would take that approach as opposed to the Nationals' approach of September 1st, you hit this many innings, we shut you down.
Right.
I would try and get him through, you know, work him through the season cautiously, have him for 6 months of limited usage versus 5 months, and then see you later.
And one thing that O'Dowd mentions in this story, again, please read this. It's excellent. And it does, you know, it does help with, you know, thinking about your team, your draft, whatever.
Mm-hmm.
He says here, there are only so many opportunities before injury or performance regression sets in. Clubs should want to utilize as many as those as possible at the highest level of competition. Now, this is in Rodon, meaning don't waste any more of his bullets in the minors.
Right.
But you know, whereas Walker was hurt and only pitched 120 innings last year, so it's different, you know?
But here's the other thing, though, and I'm not going to sit here and argue with Dan O'Dowd, you know, who made his bones while I was still flipping baseball cards. By the same token, it could be argued that the bullets Rodon will be firing now are not as effective as the ones he could be firing after a year of working on his changeup in AAA.
Absolutely. But
so
he also mentioned that he believes in, if you're major league caliber, you should
be a
on
major
the job.
Leader.
You should learn on the job.
And I think this goes back to, you know, the guy I always remember bringing this up and talking about was Howie Kendrick when he was with the Angels.
Mm-hmm.
And he was hitting .380 in AAA.
Right.
And I don't remember who their second baseman was, but it was nobody any good. And I remember saying very clearly at the time, and he is a shortstop. I remember saying it very clearly at the time, and I still think that. If there's a guy that can help you win, you get him in there right now.
Right.
But, like with Bryant, the difference between 2 weeks of Olt and Alcantara and Bryant is not a huge enough thing that it's screaming out. No question he would be an upgrade. I mean, I'm not stupid.
Sure, of course.
But
over two weeks, you can only cause so much so much damage.
And I remember saying this about
In the win column.
Yeah, I remember saying this about Kendrick. All right, .380 in AAA, you adjust for quality competition, and it's the PCL, so you adjust for the league, blah, blah, blah. That boils down to a 290, 300 hitter. And guess what he's been at the major leagues? Mm-hmm. A 286 hitter, a 291 hitter,
right?
That's a guy that could help you right away. Rodon clearly can help you right away, but maybe as a reliever. Walker needs to be in your rotation right now. Walker's got a full repertoire, you know?
You know, you bring up Howie Kendrick. I remember when we were doing, you know, when we were talking about it was Ryan Howard.
Yeah.
And when they wouldn't let him hit against lefties.
How are you going to learn to hit lefties?
How are you ever going to learn to hit lefties if you sit every single time against them?
Yeah.
And then they finally made him an everyday player, and he won out, and he, you know, MVP, he was MVP guy.
Yeah.
We're not saying we're smarter, but there are certain things that don't make sense sometimes. And sometimes we're right, and sometimes we're not. Well, a lot of times we're not.
Well, you know, you know, we always say don't confuse the outcome with the decision. Right. You know, clearly there's a process.
That's what you should have put on my pint glass, by the way.
I should have put a lot of things other than what I put, but I was having fun. So
instead of kiss my ass.
Can you say that?
Yes, I can say that.
You just did. You know, we always say don't confuse the outcome with the decision. So we're going to trust that these clubs have a process. But as our friend Mitch Dr. Stats would say from the 411 Listener League, a series of bad outcomes may indicate a bad process or a series of bad decisions.
It's better to have a bad plan and execute it than having
no plan at all.
That's what you used to always say about Chuck Lamar.
I stole that one from Joe Sheehan. So I'm just the synthesis of everybody else's ideas, like put through my own stupid
You've never filter. Had an original thought on your own.
Not one. Not a one.
How about this original thought? Walker and Erasmo Ramirez is basically a two-headed monster in the early goings.
Oh, like a piggyback thing like the Astros are doing in the minors? Sure,
exactly.
Why not?
So there you go.
And because that's a good point, because Erasmo is out of options.
Correct.
So they've either got to carry him or trade him or try and put
him
through
waivers. And
you
don't send down Walker because Erasmo Ramirez is out of options.
So have him do your five-inning 90 pitch and then have Erasmo come in and pitch the sixth and seventh and then hand it off to the big boys in the
end.
How about you, Mike?
No, that's from Odell.
Oh, okay. I was going to say, you're qualified to be a Major League GM right now.
Right now. A couple more guys. Yasmani Tomas, who we talked a little bit about earlier on. This is very dangerous situation because how much does Arizona really feel like they can contend? And if they don't, do you really even need this guy in the majors this year?
Well,
who's making a lot of money?
I'll tell you what. I am not a GM, and I would not put myself on the level of accomplished baseball people like TLR and Dave Stewart. I don't think the Diamondbacks are going to compete this year,
and I don't know
anybody who does.
Yeah, so, but, man.
But here's the problem the D-backs have. Like you said, they spent a lot of money on Tomas. Dave Stewart said, look, he doesn't look like a third baseman. We think he can play third base. They used the Bobby Bonilla comp, and frankly, they could have used Pablo Sandoval as a comp. Mm-hmm. Let's be fair.
Yeah.
The problem the Diamondbacks have is A.J. Pollock's their center fielder, and I think there's a great buying opportunity on him. I think he's a terrific, very undervalued player. So let's pencil in Pollock to center field. Then you've got Trumbo, Cody Ross, Inciarte, and Peralta.
Mm-hmm.
So they were going to have to find playing time for those guys. And if Tomas can't play third base, you put him in the mix. Now you've got five guys for two mm-hmm. spots. You know Trumbo's going to play.
Mm-hmm.
Or they say, we're not trading Mark Trumbo. We're not looking to trade him. It's not like you can hide him at first base like you can do on a lot of other clubs.
There's somebody playing first base.
Who's pretty good. So what are you going to do? Hmm? They've got a real pinch.
This will be interesting.
And I'll tell you what. I'm not a scout, small sample size, blah, 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 blah. I saw Yasmani Tomas for two at-bats in Arizona, and there was a group of us. We were in the broadcast truck, working on the tracking thing. Anyway, he had two at-bats, and he flared the ball to right field both times. Like off-speed pitches.
Right.
Now, to be fair, he got good carry. He clearly has power, but it looks like, to my extremely untrained eye, a very slow bat.
Mm. Well, that ain't good.
That's just one unexperienced view off two swings, but to see a guy have to go the other way on a breaking ball and look like he flared it wasn't really impressive.
All right, well, speaking of Cuban players with potential position issues where they should play or could play, the last name on Dan O'Dowd's list for the spring dilemmas and the roster choices is Risny Castillo.
Yeah, and the Red Sox are like the D-backs in that they have a lot of outfielders, but respectfully, their outfielders are a lot better. So Mookie Betts, the way he played in his debut last year, the way he's played in spring training.
Good player.
He's got to be their center fielder and leadoff hitter. It would be the upset of the spring if he's not their opening day center fielder and everyday center fielder. And goodness knows I've already made one big bet on that. we know who their left fielder is going to be because they've made a big bet on that.
Yep.
And they've said, John Farrell has stated, if Shane Victorino's healthy, he's our right fielder. So you've got Ruzny Castillo to figure out. You've got the wrench, Alan Craig. You've got Daniel Nava. You've got Brock Holt, who was a nice little revelation last year. None of those guys obviously are the same caliber,
right,
but you got to find playing time for all these people. What I think is going to happen, this is just a guess, is one of two things. Victorino starts the season on the DL. He's had a lot of injuries. They give him a couple more weeks in the minors to get healthy. They see what they have in Castillo. Then they can make a decision. Either that, or they basically start out with a four guys for three spots rotation where Betts gives up a little playing time early on. Castillo and Victorino sort of share right field, and they try and prove Victorino's healthy and either ease him into the fourth outfielder role or trade him. Right. You know what this reminds me of? Last year, Los Angeles Dodgers.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Crawford, Ethier, Puig, and Kemp.
Yep.
And in the beginning of the year, they sat Kemp a little bit, and they sat Puig a little bit. Remember when he was freaking out that Puig wasn't going to be an everyday player?
Yeah.
And eventually, some injuries took care of problems, and Ethier's performance took care of the problem by he becoming the fourth outfielder. But I think that's the kind of situation you're going to see with the Red Sox. But in Tout Wars, look, I mean, you can read it on the blog. I bet Mookie Betts is going to be their everyday center fielder and leadoff hitter, and I bid 18 bucks in Tout Wars on that, and I would have gone higher.
Yep, and you got him.
And I got him.
Yeah, good.
To me, it's a lot like Puig last year that I think he's probably their best offensive player in that group. So I put the money on the table to get him.
All right, so let's talk about Tout for a little bit and results, observations.
That was a good read. That was good stuff.
I highly recommend reading the whole thing. I mean, I left out a bunch of stuff because I'm not going to read a story to you.
Right. Then in paragraph three, Dan wrote.
moving on. So Tout, you mentioned the prices for Bryant. You talked a little bit about Betts. Were you surprised? I mean, you're always going to be surprised by stuff. I mean, you know, and I always throw out what happens in the end game. And I think, and the one thing that bothers me about, doesn't bother me, I wish it was easier to, you know, relay, is that, you know, sometimes end game prices get looked at and people don't know their end game prices.
Right.
So, you know, how'd you get this guy for a dollar? Because sometimes guys just fall through the cracks.
Right. Or why'd you take this guy for this price over that guy for that price?
Really? This guy over this guy? Well, you know, guys, people need to understand, you throw names out. It's not a snake draft.
Yeah.
It's an auction.
You know, I'll give you a perfect example. The very first guy I wrote about in my recap, Derek Norris is my catcher for $11. Mm-hmm. Yasmani Grandal went for $8. I absolutely would have taken Grandal for $8. Had they both been on the table at the same time,
of course.
I could only have one or the other,
right,
I would have taken Grandal for $8. But Norris came out first. I like the price. I like the player. Mm-hmm. I took him.
All right. Yeah, and you can't have regrets about that stuff because certain things you cannot know.
Look, you know, an auction is a little bit different than a straight draft because in a straight draft, you always have the choice of taking the player.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if I had to make a choice, they're both on the draft board and I'm picking a catcher, I would have taken Grandal first. But that's not the way an auction works.
Right.
You have a fair shot at every player, but once you buy a player, you're diminishing your chance on every other player.
Right.
So Norris came out early. You know, Tout is an OBP league. I think Norris will draw a lot of walks. I think he has power. I think he's going to play a lot. His struggles in the second half, the poor spring he's having, those were concerns. Mm-hmm. But I think with all of that being said, I had him valued. And let me just interrupt myself right there. I create my own projections, and then I send them off to Lord Zola to convert them into dollar values for me. And then I use those as my guideline. If you look at the 345 players purchased in the auction, there was a 0.926 correlation between my projected dollar values, thanks to LZ, and what they went for. So I think my dollar values, and again, after Todd sent them to me, I put my own tinkering on them. You know, I think the closer scale will be this, blah, 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 blah.
Mm-hmm.
So on the whole, the dollar values I had were very good. Catchers went very inexpensively on the whole. Posey went for $5 less than I thought he would. Lucroy went for $7 less than I thought he would. So that pushed Norris down. Had I thought about that, I might have gotten Norris a little cheaper or waited on Grandal. But there are always a couple of guys that sort of break the scale. I overbid on some guys, and I thought I got discounts on some guys. So,
well, in the end, I mean, you only have $260 to spend anyway.
Right.
You know? So, I mean, it's interesting. I went out with you guys on a week ago tonight. and got to, you know, talking about auction and strategy and tout or whatever. And I'll be honest, it made me miss it, you know, that I haven't done it now in 2 years. I was offered a spot back next year.
Back in the touts?
I don't know if I told you that.
That would be fun.
I'm considering it.
You know, the thing is, I was actually just thinking about this as we were talking about it. We don't have any representation in the unmixed tout leagues.
Right.
You know, we have myself, Fred, and Goose. Goose is under the Roto Experts banner, mm-hmm. or maybe Masters Ball. Apologies. So officially, they're two MLB.com guys, but they're really three.
Right, and you moved out of NL because there was a scheduling conflict.
And honestly, I don't do any other unmixed leagues.
Right, right.
And it was just easier. Frankly, it was easier for me to prepare.
And it's funny because I, you know, Fred Zinke was in the office last week for obvious reasons. He was coming to draft, so I got a chance to, you know, talk to him face to face and meet with him. And you know, he's won mixed twice.
He's won twice in 4 years and come in second the other 2 years.
Right. So
he's got 1-2, 1-2.
And you know, I was talking about, you know, AL only, and he goes, and he said, and he goes, you know what? It's funny you bring that up, because he was thinking about, at one point he was thinking about requesting to move. Now, when you think about it, you win tout, you win tout. It's not like you get a bigger trophy if you win AL over mixed. It's all equal. He's like, you know, I was looking for a different, you know, maybe looking for a different challenge. Because it is a different challenge. Not mixed. And mixed is completely different. And there's no doubt about that. But it doesn't make one harder than the other. And he said, but I really like the guys. You know, and I said, I absolutely know what you mean. I was like, I don't miss the prep. I don't miss the sweating it out and being nervous on Sundays, putting my bids in and waking up Monday. And, you know, first thing I do when I get out of bed is look and see who I got. I don't miss that anxiety, but I miss the room, you know.
Good and, bunch of people.
Yeah. Man. So he stays in mixed because those are his guys now, you know. But that's why he's there. Now you're in there and you prefer that. So
and you know,
that answers the question, and I'm not in it anymore. That's why there's nobody in none.
And I should mention, one of the reasons I like mixed is because I like some AL players and I like some NL players. Right. Look, everybody knows my pet player is Encarnacion, and I got my Walk in the Parrot shirt on today. You know, when I was in NL, I couldn't bid on Encarnacion.
Right.
You know, I like the fact that there's some pet players in the NL and some pet players in the AL. This year, you know, I love Puig. I wanted Puig on a lot of teams this year.
Mm-hmm.
I'm a big buyer on Mookie Betts. I wanted him on a lot of teams this year. You know, that's the fun part about mixed.
No, that's a good point. It's a good point. And it takes away some of the one thing that makes mixed a little easier just on draft day is, or a little different. I don't want it's necessarily easier, but, you know, you get to the dregs.
Yeah.
You know,
unmixed, yeah.
You know, you get to dregs, and it's just like you don't have to really deal with that. As much, because you can have a Daniel Norris as your number two catcher or whatever, and you're like, okay, you know, but you could have two catchers in AL that
don't
are backups,
right?
Like you got Bill Hasselman and, you know, J.R. Murphy.
Bill Hasselman. Where did that come from?
Because I always used to get Pudge, so I would always draft Hasselman. As a dollar.
You get Tom Nieto as your second catcher.
So I always had every time I've had Pudge, I've had Hasselman, just because I was like, you know what, I'm not going to worry about my second catcher. I have the best. I'm just going to spend the dollar on Hasselman.
Right, I've locked up Rangers catcher production.
Right, and you know, so and that's all you needed. So anyway, that's where that came from.
That's funny.
Let's do some news and notes, and then we'll get to the Twitter machine. So a lot of news, actually, out of Dodgers camp. You know, the left shoulder of Rue. The signing, not official yet, but it should be shortly, of Oliveira, going back to the whole Cuban theme, and Brandon League, who we had discussed as potential, you know, getting some saves in the early goings while Jansen is on the shelf, he's on his way to the DL. So let's start with Rue. You know, again, it's tough to, you know, when we're in May, June, July, and a guy gets hurt, the first thing we say is, okay, who's getting the playing time now? But the first 2 weeks of April, and I'll prove my point with our next topic, there's so many off days. Sometimes you don't need a fifth starter until 10 days into the season.
Well, yeah, you know, I drafted Rue for $6 in Tout Wars. I had him valued at 12, so I like the discount.
Sure.
And I built in some injury risk on that $12 bid.
Mm-hmm.
The thing that's concerning about that is that he had a sore shoulder at the end of last year.
That's true.
And it's still sore now. Now, the good news is the MRI produced no structural damage or identified no structural damage.
It's clean.
Right. It's just, you know, it's just inflammation, and they just have to wait. I hope this is like the Cole Hamels situation last year, where you just wait for the inflammation to go down, you start from scratch on the throwing program, and when he feels good, he comes back, and then he's fine the rest of the way. I drafted Hamels in a lot of leagues last year. Mm-hmm. I made that big bet mm-hmm. that he would be fine. I got him in Tout Wars. I got him in NFBC. I got him in a Friends and Family League. And it turned out, I think I got him in the 411 league, as a matter of fact. Mm-hmm. That turned out to be great. Even though he didn't get a lot of wins, he pitched like an ace otherwise. So not to put Hyunjin Ryu on the same level as Cole Hamels, but that was kind of my bet that, you know what, I'll eat a little injury risk in the beginning of the year. When he comes back, he'll pitch fine. So I took the discount. The Dodgers went from having a lot of pitching depth to not a lot, because now they're talking about Joe Weiland maybe as their fill-in fifth starter, and, you know, he's kind of a journeyman type. Mm-hmm. So
we'll keep an eye on that. Oliveira, you know, they have a second baseman, shortstop, and third baseman for this year, pretty well locked up in Kendrick, Rollins, and Uribe. But all three of those guys are free agents. So this is a nice play. Again, you know, going back to your league for tonight, not a bad idea to get this guy in a keeper league because...
Yeah, I think you just hit the nail on the head. On Twitter, take Twitter opinions with a grain of salt, but mm-hmm. the general consensus seemed to be slagging the Dodgers over that. Well, they already have a second baseman and a shortstop and a third baseman. They already have Alex Guerrero. Well, Kendrick is 31, has a history of injury problems, and he's going to be a free agent. Rollins is 38, 39.
Yeah, he's up there.
Has battled some injuries and is going to be a free agent. Uribe is 37, has had some injury problems, and is going to be a free agent. I don't understand what this is all about.
I like this move.
The only thing that bothers me about it, well, look, the dollars are what they are. This six-year deal, because I think he's 29 already. Mm. So you're definitely getting the guy's post-peak years. You know, a four-year deal maybe would have made a little bit more sense. But clearly this is a guy who's going to be capable of helping them in the second half of the season.
Right.
And, you know, it's a long season. They call it the beast.
No,
right?
it's not a bad stash idea, and I think it's a very high-end move in a keeper league if he can do it.
Yeah.
Now, did he go in Tout?
No, he did not.
Interesting.
No, he did not.
Interesting.
It's funny, you know, after... The first thing I do after Tout Wars, after going to Foley's, and then after drinking a lot of water and taking a lot of Advil, is I look at my roster and figure out who I'm going to need to bid on in the first week. You know, how many spots am I going to need to fill?
Right.
And I went in and started making lists of all the undrafted free agents, you know, off my draft sheet. And I actually started, you know, look, you can find names.
Sure.
But I started to see some names of guys that were jumping out at me like, oh, this guy didn't get drafted. That's mm-hmm. interesting. I'm not going to name any names because I don't want my competition listening, Anthony Desclafani.
But he had a nice day yesterday.
I'll tell you what, you know, I started to see some names of guys who were very interesting to me.
Mm, yeah.
I look, not as, you know, I'm not going to find a $30 player on waiver wire, on the waiver wire, but maybe I am.
Right.
Because nobody was talking about, you know, Carlos Carrasco on draft day last year.
Good point. Brandon Lee, we mentioned that. I mean, listen, it is what it is for the
Joel
first
couple. Joel Peralta, right?
Yeah, I mean, and that's who I picked in the very early goings. But, you know, League and Howell and whatever. So keep an eye on that.
They'll mix it up, but I think Mattingly has proven he likes to have a guy.
Yeah.
I don't think he wants to do the committee.
And I would think that anyone who drafted Jansen, myself included, in my 16-team mix, Friends and Family League, I don't know, no family, just all friends.
But they're like you.
And I don't even know half the guys, so really it's just half a Friends League.
Distant Family League. Cousin Vinny Family League.
Yeah, but, you know, I drafted Jansen but also drafted three closers. Now, I usually try to anyway, but I hope that anyone who drafted Jansen didn't just draft two closers. Well, I think that's a little foolish.
Slowly raise his hand. This was a real tactical mistake by me, and I fully admit this. I'll admit to a couple of mistakes in Tout Wars, because in that competition, mm-hmm. plus a handful of Maker's Mark and ginger ales, you're going to make some mistakes in the end game. But I took Victorino in the reserve round mm-hmm. as a hedge against Betts, because mm-hmm. if Betts loses his playing time, presumably Castillo plays center,
sure.
and Victorino plays every day in right. I drafted Kenley Jansen. I got him for $14. Mm-hmm. I made up my mind going in. I was going to draft
him. How much would he have want for healthy?
All right. So, Derek Van Riper from RotoWire, who's the defending champ, mm-hmm. opened first. You know, defending champ gets to first put the first sure. player on the board. He put Aroldis Chapman out. Mm-hmm. Aroldis went for 23.
Okay.
This is interesting to me on two levels. I asked him. There was a little bit of a technical difficulty after the first couple of picks with like the audio or whatever. So I said, how come Chapman? You know, I would have expected Trout or someone like that, or maybe Chris Bryant.
Right.
And he said, I wanted to set the bar on closers.
Mm-hmm.
That was interesting to me on a lot of levels. Number one, that showed me what he wanted to do in the draft, or so I thought, because he went out and drafted zero closers.
Really?
Defending champ at Tout Wars did not draft an everyday closer in the draft. Now, he drafted an awesome team in every other way.
Did he punt last year, too?
Yeah, and he just built, he did it. You know, he's a don't pay for saves guy, and he built it up during the season. Mm. So that was really interesting to me. Number two, he chose to set the bar with closers on Aroldis over Craig Kimbrell. Mm-hmm. That was really interesting to me. And number three, Aroldis went for 23, and I think Kimbrell also went for 23, which was interesting to me because over the last few years, I've mentally set $21 as the top closer price. So that's not a huge difference,
but
it changes the scale. Now, here's where it got interesting for me. I made up my mind that I wasn't going to go after Aroldis or Kimbrell because I wanted two top guys, and I wanted to take the discount on Kenley Jansen.
Right.
And then I said, who's the next tier down?
Right.
And I targeted Melanson.
Right.
I targeted Melanson for 18 and Kenley Jansen for 17. And I figured Kenley will miss a month, and otherwise he's right below the top guys. So I figured take a $21 closer, take a month off, and he's a $17 closer.
Sure.
I got him for 14, ecstatic.
Mm-hmm.
Budgeted 18 for Melanson, got him for 18.
Hmm.
So I was really happy for that. Now, the way the draft went, there were some really nice discounts on guys like Sean Doolittle, Jake McGee, mm-hmm. guys like that who are going to be coming back later in the season. Brett Cecil went for $3, which was a great, great pick. I think maybe Joe...
And knowing that Joe he got anointed.
Got him. Yeah, and... Well, he went late, but, you know, he hadn't been named the closer, but I don't know how...
Okay, so it wasn't official that Gibbons had named him.
I don't know how any of us could have thought otherwise.
Well, yeah,
I think Joe Pisapia got him for $3. Great, great pick. And Joe, by the way, is one of the new guys in the league this year, and he really showed his chops very well. So nice job by Joe. So that was all the interesting stuff. The tactical error was I didn't pick up Joel Peralta in the reserve round.
You're dumb.
I picked up Edward Mujica, figuring Uehara would start the season on the DL.
Right. Oh my God.
So I was thinking about that,
yeah.
And I totally forgot that I have Kenley Jansen. I could have just taken Peralta.
Yeah, well, at least you picked somebody.
So if you want to smack me upside the head over that one, I take the smacking.
Well, it's funny, though. Uehara's on the list of topics.
Mm.
So you think Mujica's going to get the saves.
Or Tozawa. I mean, I would assume Mujica because of last year.
Yeah. Now it's hamstring.
Yeah.
So that's not as concerning unless he's
not
running the field of pitch and
it's not an arm injury, which is nice, but you know, soft tissue injuries of any kind have a really high chance of recurrence because you're constantly using those muscles over and over and over.
Is it right leg or left leg?
That I don't know. They've gone from...
Let's go to the internet.
Yeah, well, I'm jabbering away. You can look it up and fill in the facts I don't have. Bad job by me again. They went from we don't think he's going to be ready for opening day to we feel a lot better to, well, now we're really not so sure. And the way he finished last year, you know, I think some caution is advised here. He really struggled. In the first couple of outings this year in the spring, he struggled again. So, you know, Mujica wasn't just a start of the season fill-in. It was maybe a, you know, dollar flyer and see if this turns into something.
Right.
So which hamstring is it?
You need to give me a second.
Okay. I should have picked up Peralta.
Keep filling.
All right. So somebody behind the glass is going like with the hands together, like stretch.
Right hamstring tightness.
Right hamstring. Okay, so that's his push-off leg.
Yeah, it's push-off.
It's a big one.
Yeah. I mean, I think I would rather have it on his landing than on his push.
Well, if you think about how...
But I guess it really doesn't matter. It could be 50-50.
Right. They both matter.
Yeah, they both do matter. That's for sure.
You know, I'm happy I got Mujica for a dollar. I think that was a wise little pickup. And I blew it by not picking up Peralta.
All right, last news and note. Mike Socha came out, said he may go with a four-man rotation. They had Garrett Richards is on the shelf to start the season. Mm-hmm. When he gets back, which could be mid-April, and I personally very much hope so.
Yeah.
Because I'm a very big Garrett Richards fan. Then he would slide right in. And again, just saying what we were about Rue, you kind of don't need a fifth starter the first 2 weeks. You can pretty much get away with it with all the off days. But it is interesting to announce a four-man because that means all the guys that were competing for the spot that was opened by Richards' injury didn't do anything.
Yeah.
And one of them is a guy I like, and Andrew Heaney.
Andrew Heaney. I watched, we have whatever spring training game is on in the office, and watched Andrew Heaney pitch the other day against the Rangers, and got roughed up pretty good.
Yeah.
You know, the thing I like about this is that I got Jared Weaver for $5 in Tout Wars. Mm-hmm. And I know all the reasons everybody doesn't like Jared Weaver, But what I like is he won 18 games last year with a useful ERA, WHIP, and strikeouts, and I got him for $5.
That's pretty good.
And we've said many times we don't chase wins, but we don't fear them either. Right. And Jared Weaver is a guy who historically goes late into games and wins a lot of games. So I couldn't believe I got him for $5. I mean, unsexy as you can get, but I'm thrilled about that. So fourth starter means he gets to pitch. Four-man rotation means he pitches every fifth day no matter what.
Right.
So you go from budgeting 32 starts to maybe 33 or 34, maybe another win, another, you know, yeah, 8 or 10 strikeouts.
Never know.
I like that a lot. I'll tell you what, I mean, just one last thought on Tout Wars. Yesterday I started going in and looking at the dollar breakdowns and just trying to get a feel for it. I budget, when I do my dollar projections, a 2-to-1 hitter-to-pitcher spend.
Mm-hmm.
And it came out almost exactly that, 67%, 67-point-something percent to 32-point-something percent. So the table as a whole spent the way I thought they would. I was not, for a change, the number one spender on offense. Mm. Patrick Davitt from Baseball HQ outspent me by a dollar or two. I was not, curiously, the number one spender on bullpen. Mm. Two guys outspent me on bullpen, and two other guys tied me at $33 total because I got the discount on Kenley. And I took LaTroy Hawkins as my third closer for $1.
Mm.
That's about the cheapest 20 saves you're ever going to get.
Mm-hmm.
Knock on wood. But what was interesting to me is how the money broke out and how I spent the way I did. So I just want to talk about myself a little bit more real quickly.
Allow myself to talk about myself.
What topic do I know better, right? The two players I overspent on the most compared to my projections were Encarnacion and Josh Donaldson. I had Encarnacion for 31. I took him for 35. I had Donaldson at 27. I went up to 32 on him.
Mm.
So this reflects a couple of things. Number one, catchers went at a discount compared to what I thought they would. I undervalued the third baseman. All the third basemen went for a few dollars more than I thought they would. So if I scaled up that 27, realistically, I probably got Donaldson for only maybe $1 or $2 overbid. Beltre went for more than I thought he would. Sandoval went for more than I thought he would, et cetera, et cetera. Zimmerman, so on. But the other thing is I made up my mind going into Tout Wars this year, I was not going to get shortchanged on power. I was going to draft mashers, and I was going to pay for it, and if I had to chase, I was going to chase.
Right.
I was not going to get caught short on power. And it goes fast. There were 13 30 home run hitters in the major leagues last year. I got Encarnacion. I overspent by $4, you know, compared to my projections. I got Donaldson, who hit 29 last year, but now is moving to Toronto. I overspent for him by $5. I got Chris Carter, who I think is an even money shot to lead the major league in home runs. I projected him for 20, got him for 20. I went on Puig. I had him projected at 31. I spent 31 maybe. I might have gotten him right at dollars. By the way, Puig is going to break out this year. Puig is going to hit 25 homers this year at least. He hit one yesterday. And again, it was off Jason Lane. It's Arizona. Spring stats don't matter, blah, blah, blah. He sat on a curveball and smoked this thing so hard. It was really sick. Four homers already this spring. Isolated power, that's sustainable.
Yep.
Anyhow, so I, as I looked at my draft, I was pushing dollars towards power. But meanwhile, I got a discount on Tanaka. I got a discount on Rue, even when you factor in the shoulder. I got a discount on Jared Weaver. So rather than taking the savings on my starting pitching and reinvesting it in pitching to maintain that 2-to-1 spread, I essentially took dollars off starting pitching and took discounts there and spent the premium on offense. On power.
No problem with
that. So that's how it worked out. So you always walk out of your draft feeling like some anxiety, like, oh, if I'd only done this, I'd only done that. I keep looking at my team and I keep feeling pretty good about it.
That's all that matters.
I need more starting pitching depth. I have some injury risks. I need more speed. I know all these things. But I really like my team. I love my outfield, bro.
Yeah.
Love my outfield.
Go ahead, name it.
Puig, Mookie Betts, Jason Worth. Again, injury risk. He'll be back in 2 weeks. My 4 and 5 are Cole Calhoun and A.J. Pollock.
Oh, nice.
Cole Calhoun, if you prorate what he did over 127 games last year to, let's say, 150 or 155, 110 runs, top three in the majors, 21 homers, 8 steals.
Yep.
And I got him for $18.
Yep. Pretty good. All right, Twitter questions.
Okay,
let's go. And if you want any more Tout results and use it as a cheat sheet or whatever, head over to the blog, fantasy411.mlblogs.com. They should be posted. If they're not, Goose is fired. Okay.
Work for Masters Ball.
At Lake Ramon, $20 on Hanley or $7 on Castellanos?
You know, look, I think Hanley's overvalued, but you got to keep him for $20.
Yep. At Kennesaw M. Landis. So, well, wow, welcome back to life, Commissioner.
From the afterlife.
First pick in Dynasty. Position, not an issue. Who do I take? King Felix, Joey Bats, Abreu, or Rendon?
I'm taking Abreu.
You love Abreu.
In a scratch league, right. I'm taking Abreu over any of those guys this year, right. Especially in a Dynasty league. Listen, yep. I've said it before, I'm saying it again. I am all in on Abreu this year.
Yeah, you couldn't get him in town.
And that was why I ended up spending heavy on Encarnacion. I budgeted 36 for Abreu. I had the $35 bid. Mm-hmm. Scott Swayne bid 36, but it was really early. So I figured if I projected Abreu to 36 and he goes for 36, then my other number should be good.
That's a little dangerous.
Right. And here's the thing. I projected him for 36, but who knows how far he would have gone had I kept going.
But as I would say, let's find out.
Well, but here's
because
the thing.
You could say 37, and that you don't have to say 39.
Right, but here's the thing. Nobody else bid 37. So I was the only guy, other than Scott, and I'll never know, who would have kept going. But
I usually ask, by the way.
That made me feel...
You know you can ask questions.
What, is anybody going to bid 38 if I bid 37?
No, you ask Scott how high he would have went.
I don't like to do that. To me, it's like asking the guy see a guy's cards when you're playing poker.
What are you talking about? The guy's gone. The player's gone. It's over.
But if I know what he's going to... Again, Derek Van Riper said he wanted to set the bar on closers but had no intention of drafting closers. Mm-hmm. I know a little bit about Derek's draft after the first player. You know, again, it's not a poker game where I'm trying to take chips directly from him because there's so many players.
I think you're being awfully presumptive.
Long story short, I didn't want to chase that early in. But once I saw what the dollars were going for on other guys, then I decided I would push heavy on Encarnacion. All that being said, I like Abreu a lot this year.
At La Flama Blanca 05.
The White Flame.
I like that.
Would you trade Liriano, Latos, or Cashner along with Ellsbury for Sonny Gray and Jay Bruce? If yes, which of the three pitchers would you try to trade first?
It's interesting. I get the philosophy, but I wouldn't do it. If I were going to do it, it would be Latos, because as much as I like him, the velocity hasn't come back, the injury concerns, he's been getting roughed up this spring. I like him a lot, but I wonder if maybe, you know, we're a year too late on him.
So you'd rather have Latos and Ellsbury instead of Sonny Gray and Jay Bruce?
Well, I'd rather have those three pitchers and Ellsbury rather than Sonny Gray and Bruce. And I'll tell you why.
I agree with you, by the way. I think
Bruce's power will come back. Clearly, that was undone by the knee last year. But there were also a couple of other concerns with Jay Bruce. And I had him in tout in NFBC. And my boy Doug Cassidy tried to talk me off him, and I took him anyway. I should have listened to Cass Scouting Services. Bruce's strikeout rate has gone up every single year over the last five. His struggles against lefties have become more and more pronounced every year over the last five. And two things really got to him last year. He was chasing a lot of high fastballs. Maybe you could say that was a function of the knee problem. He was trying to do things that he wouldn't otherwise do. But the shift killed his batting average on balls in play last year.
Love it.
So even if some of the power comes back, you could be looking at a Chris Carter here.
Right.
You know, a 30 home run, 238 hitter.
And what did Jay Bruce go for in mixed talent, remember?
Teens. I don't remember off the top of my head.
I mean, Chris Carter went for 20.
Right. So... anyway, I understand, you know, he's got concerns about Ellsbury, but I view Ellsbury as accident prone, not injury prone.
Right.
I'm not too worried about his strained oblique right now. It's a good time for a guy to have an owie. You know, we're talking about if a guy's going to miss a week, what's the difference if it's in April or May
or
July?
Right.
You know, I'd rather have him miss it now than September, to be honest with you.
Yeah.
So I think Ellsbury's the best player. As much as I like Sonny Gray, I don't think he's a big enough upgrade over any of those other starters. I stick with what I have.
Okay. At Michael Rowe Kiki. Can only keep two out of Longoria, Price, Jordan Zimmermann, and Justin Upton. 5x5, head-to-head.
Head-to-head, you got to keep Price. Led the major leagues in strikeouts last year. Yep. You know, maybe he's not Kershaw, but he's in that very next year.
I agree.
And that kind of pushes Zimmermann out because I'm not going to keep two starters. So then it comes down to Longoria versus...
Justin Upton.
You know, I think right now most people would take Upton. I'm not off the Longoria bandwagon. In a bad year last year, he played 162 games, had 22 homers and 91 RBIs. I would keep Longoria and Price. Okay. That's just me.
I would do Upton and Price.
Okay, I get that.
I'm high on Upton. We did the. I forgot to mention the Fantasy magazine is out.
Oh yes.
We did a digital magazine.
Forget to mention
Fantasy 411 digital magazine. Please go find it. Go ahead.
I tweeted a link out yesterday.
Okay,
so
good.
Go at shortstops and within my last couple of tweets.
Well, and hopefully at Fantasy 411 has done their job and they tweeted it.
And I posted on Facebook and my dad comment on my Facebook, send me a copy.
Print it out and collate it, and staple it and send it.
So I went, Dad, you're showing your age. Online magazine.
Oh, God.
Good times.
That's funny. I like that. But we were asked to pick, me, you, Zinke, and Fink.
Yep.
We're asked to pick our guy that may not get drafted in the first round, but will be a first rounder. You went with Puig, and I went with Justin Upton.
Yeah.
So that's why I'm going to stick to my guns and say I think Upton has a big year. I don't want to hear about Petco with him.
Yeah.
He has anywhere power. They actually moved it in anyway. By the way, walk year. Oh, by the way, 27 years old.
Yeah, look.
By the way, Justin Upton.
I totally agree with all that.
I'm not saying you're rolling on Longoria. I'm just saying that's why I take.
Yeah, and you know, I think you said it best about Upton. You know, we have the Larry Walker line that we've used for years, hitters hit. Mm-hmm. And for the most part, it's validated. But anywhere power is a term I've come to use a lot. Mm-hmm. It's not like Upton hits fence scrapers. You know,
right.
You know, like Ellsbury, you could say, exploited Yankee Stadium and hit 17 or 18 home runs or whatever he hit last year. But he's not really
right.
A power hitter.
No.
You know, if
he can maybe get one out in left center at Yankee Stadium.
Right.
Justin, maybe.
If Justin Upton hits it, it's going to go. Yeah. I mean, he put up 27 homers in yeah. Atlanta. That's a pretty good pitcher's park, mm-hmm. too. And San Diego down the line yes. is actually pretty favorable. So right-handed pull hitters,
yep.
it's not a bad park.
Absolutely.
I totally think he can make a run at 30 this year. I just like, with the position scarcity, Longoria still being in his prime, et cetera, you know.
Well, it's up to Michael to choose between. We both agree on price. I think that's almost a no-brainer. Now, you know, what are you feeling, Longoria or Upton? You decide. at C Chap 2, Richards or Lynn for this year? So I'll assume Garrett Richards, Lance Lynn.
Yeah,
so,
I keep Richards.
Yeah, me too. I love him.
I'm willing to spot you 2 weeks on Richards.
Yep, me too.
You know, and again, just a quick note, not to go on a tangent. You know, Joe Sheehan, of course, you have to subscribe to the Joe Sheehan newsletter if you're not already, has pointed out a lot of areas where Richards can regress this year. The batting average on balls in play, the home run to fly ball rate, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And I think that's all valid, and I think Joe is totally right. But I go back to, again, we're talking about the sort of rules we live by. Jason Gray, what's different about this player? Mm-hmm. Richards really commanded his secondary stuff a lot better last year and had tremendous velocity. I mean, top two, top three velocity on the fastball. I think that will play. So even with the regression, I still think that makes Richards a soft ace number two caliber pitcher.
I agree. At DMS3, I get McCutchen.
DMS?
Yeah.
Wow, old school Doc Martin Stompers.
At DMS3, I get McCutchen, Betts, and Salazar.
I love it. What are you giving up?
Donaldson, Walker, Cruz, and Wood.
Sold.
I have Frazier and Wright to play third anyway. Standard Roto thoughts.
Sold.
Okay.
You're giving a lot, but you're getting
it's a good
arguably
trade.
The number two player in fantasy baseball. Mookie Betts, I think. Again, I'm assuming the playing time, and I know there's mm-hmm. risk here, but I think he's going to put up second-round numbers. I'm totally sold on this guy.
Yeah, I got it.
People think I'm nuts. I get it.
I get it.
But if he hits 290 mm-hmm. with,
and by the way, you're not the only one that's sold. I mean,
sure.
Just to be fair to you, I mean, people that think you're nuts and you're the only one on this bandwagon are nuts.
Let's put some, assuming Betts play. Here's my pie in the sky projection for Betts, which I don't think is pie in the sky.
Mm-hmm.
290. A dozen homers, mm-hmm. 25 steals, and batting leadoff for the Red Sox, 110 runs. Does that make him any less valuable than Anthony Rendon? Mm-hmm. You know, Rendon has second, third. Betts will be mm-hmm. outfield only. I get that.
Mm-hmm.
But does that make him an end of second rounder?
Yeah. That may be, I mean, yes.
Why not?
Yeah. I get it.
You know, runs is such a forgotten category.
I couldn't agree more. It drives me nuts how much runs gets ignored.
Because we're grown up, we grow up on Triple Crown categories, mm-hmm. and we all know stolen bases because, yep. you know, because Billy Hamilton, Ben yep. Revere, like you learn to look for stolen bases. You never learn to look at runs.
Yeah. I don't understand why most people don't. It's just as equal as any other category, and guys that get into triple digits in a category have insane value.
Yeah. You know, that's one of the reasons Trout is not only the number one guy, but so far ahead of everybody right. else as yep. the number one guy.
Yep.
You know, 125 runs.
Yep.
Matt Carpenter 2 years yep. ago, I mean, he didn't replicate
yeah.
it. Dude scored 127 runs.
That's always my example is Carpenter, but it's hard to bring up because the next year he tanked.
Well, you know, look, A slight dip in his in his batting average and balls in play, slight dip in home run to fly ball rate. The difference with Carpenter is that he didn't have other categories to fall back on.
Right, exactly.
These other guys have other categories to fall back on.
Absolutely. Very true.
Cole Calhoun has other categories to fall back on.
True. At Jay Eckert, who has the best value in 2015 as a 20th round keeper? Springer, Soler, or Peterson?
Ooh.
Wow.
Nice.
That's a great question.
Tons of good choices. You know, Springer, big time power, can steal bases, but a huge strikeout risk, could hurt you with the batting average. Soler, clearly we've seen anywhere power. Surprisingly polished hitter. Mm-hmm. You know, for a guy with his strikeout and walk numbers, I saw him a lot last year. He was very polished, very impressive. And Peterson, I mean, opening day 2020 threat, Dodgers center fielder in a really good lineup.
Tough one.
Lots to like here, but I go with Springer because we have the most evidence on him of what he can be.
Yeah.
Even with the risk, Springer's probably a 30-20 guy this year.
No, I think I agree. And listen, it's like 1-1A. It's not no-brainer here, but I have to agree with you. I think Springer's your comfortability with his ceiling.
Comfortability, I love it.
Your comfort with his ceiling is probably makes him the number one.
I would rank them as he presented them, Springer, Soler, Peterson. Okay. Simply because we have that's the body of evidence we have on each guy to judge them on.
Sure.
There's lots to like about all of them.
Yeah.
But I rank them based on what I can see too.
At Bushy Smalls. Redraft league, Souza or Pompey for last utility?
Oh, that's interesting. Well, they're very different players, but I'd go with Souza because of the five category, you know, well, I should say the power speed combination, who knows. But you know, the other thing is he strikes out a lot, but he drew a lot of walks in the minors too. So that makes me think his overall skill set will play. Pompey's got to show me a little bit more. You know, he didn't have great plate discipline, and guys who don't have a lot of power, you have to see how that will translate.
Right.
So I'd probably go for Souza because I think he's got a wider base of skills.
Yeah, you know, Souza, to me, and I know, shame on me for this one, but when he
Shame
was,
on you.
Shame on me. When he was up last year, by the time I got around to him, just kind of paying attention, he makes the catch to save Zimmerman's no-hitter. I'm thinking, oh, look at this guy. Nice fourth outfielder, you know, defensive replacement, blah, 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 because that's what he was. He was a defensive replacement, saves a no-hitter, right? And I just kind of forgot about it. I had no idea how insane his minor league season was.
Yeah.
Like, insane.
Now, the one thing that gives me pause about that are, you know, it's the Brandon Larsen problem.
Right.
You know, he's already 26. It's not like
that's
he's
true.
A 21 or 22-year-old guy who tore up AAA. It was his first, I believe it was his first year in AAA, but he was a little bit of a repeater, I think. Or maybe it was his second year in AAA, but again, a little bit of an old prospect. Yeah. So this might be as good as it gets. You don't see ceiling.
Right.
But again, if he goes...
Serviceable, you know, fourth, fifth outfielder.
You know, is this a 2020 guy or is this the next Justin Reggiano?
Right.
You know, there's a big difference in there.
But you still take Souza here anyway.
Yeah.
Why not? Scotty Tuhati, 29. Mm. Which five do I keep? So we're going to eliminate, let's see, there's 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. There's 8 people here.
Right,
so we're
going to
cut 3. Right. Abreu, Gomez, Dickerson.
Right, drop them, they're keepers. So now it's cut 3 out of 6.
So Abreu, Gomez, Dickerson?
Abreu and Gomez, slam dunk keepers.
Right.
They're first round caliber players.
Yep.
Just cross them off.
Okay.
So really the question is, out of these 6, keep 3.
Okay, thank you. Dickerson, Reyes, Polanco. I'm sure it's Greg. not plus.
Placido.
Wainwright, Harvey, and Cole.
Wow. Well, I think you got to drop Polanco just because he's the least proven of this bunch, and you're already keeping 2 bats right away.
Yep.
Not to say I don't like him, but I just think he's the first one out. Man, that is a tough choice. You know, there's a lot of concerns about Wainwright, but 80% of Adam Wainwright is a number 2 starter.
Mm-hmm.
Matt Harvey, rate stat-wise, has been as good as any pitcher in baseball other than Kershaw since coming up.
Mm-hmm.
Garrett Cole, everybody loves as a breakout this year.
Mm-hmm.
And who's the other hitter?
Reyes and Dickerson.
And Reyes. I mean, you know, Reyes arguably is the number 3 shortstop.
I know.
I would probably drop Cole. Same reason as I'm dropping Polanco. Not because I don't like him. I just simply think he's not to the level of these other guys.
I think it comes down to Dickerson and Wainwright as your last spot.
Yeah, this is a nice problem to have. Do you drop Dickerson because we're already keeping some bats, or do you say I don't need 3 pitchers? Or
well, I mean, he's only if you're keeping Reyes, I'm keeping Harvey.
Yeah, I think so.
I'm keeping Harvey, Reyes, Gomez, Abreu. So now it is: do I want a 1-2, or do I want 3 outfielders?
See, here's the
thing.
It's
tough.
I'm not a guy that invests heavily in starting pitching. That's well known, and we've been talking about that. But I do believe this. If you have a finger quote ace, you need a strong number two.
Yeah.
Otherwise, it defeats the purpose. There's no reason to draft Kershaw and then have Danny Salazar as your number two. Salazar could be that guy.
Right.
But you, if you're going to draft an ace, you need to back it up. So if you're keeping Harvey, you got to keep Wainwright.
And also, and let's go back to this. Now, listen, and you got, and we always have to remember this, which is why I bring it up. Now, Dickerson, Polanco, and Cole, all very good players,
are back in the draft.
You can get one of these guys if you really want them, right? Yeah. In theory. Now, if you can't, you're getting somebody of this caliber.
Yeah.
Right? Because yes, the top 60 players are off the board, but the top 72 are still out there.
And he's got two of the top, what, eight, nine?
Right, exactly.
In a scratch draft, Abreu versus Gomez, what's the last pick before both of those guys are off the board? Nine?
Yeah, something like that.
Yeah, yeah. Okay.
And that's the thing. I mean, if you like Dickerson, okay, get him back. But are you going to lose sleep because Dickerson went before you in the sixth round, which is really your first round?
You got to tip your cap.
Got to tip it. And there's somebody else there.
Yeah.
So, all right, that'll do it. That was a long...
Already?
You said we were going to do an hour? We did an hour.
I think we did 58 minutes.
All right.
Well, let's just stretch. Do like this for two more minutes. Let's talk about Edward Mujica some more.
Don't forget about the Dan O'Dowd column on MLB.com. It's fantastic, talking about spring training positional decisions that need to be made. Don't forget about the Fantasy Digital magazine. Digital, Mr. Schwartz. Digital, sir. That means electric or electronic.
On your computer. You found me on Facebook, Dad. You can find the magazine.
It means you need to read something. You need to find it on something that requires a plug or a battery.
Or a solar panel.
Or a solar panel, right. So you got the digital magazine. Don't forget the blog, fantasy411.mlblogs.com. The Twitter machine, at fantasy411. And just keep an eye on everything. Is Fred Zinke doing a chat tomorrow on Friday?
I think so.
I think Fred Fridays.
Yeah, Freddy Fridays.
Yeah, hopefully he does. Keep an eye on all Fred's stuff. He's doing a fantastic job. And you know what? You do a fantastic job, Corey.
I appreciate it. Let's quickly tell the folks what drafts you have coming up.
What drafts I have coming up?
Yeah.
I have my NL-only, 10-team NL-only Extreme Keeper League coming up on Wednesday. And then I probably will do a draft in the office with the content team.
All right, cool.
And I think I'm done.
That's departmental, that's teamwork.
Yeah.
So tonight I have the Buffalo Feats League. This is with my wife's boss. Mm-hmm. All the guys in the league know I'm with MLB.
Honey, you better let him win.
Yeah, they're all talking.
Or I'm fired.
They're all talking trash at me because I'm the guy with baseball. It's a 12-team mixed auction keeper league, but it has some interesting rules that we'll talk about in the next podcast.
Yeah.
Monday is the Gotham Diamond District League. That's with neighbor Steve and a bunch of cool fantasy industry people and friends of the 411. Really fun league. And then following Thursday.
What time is that?
That is 6:30 in the p.m. on Monday, March 30th at Galway Pub here in Manhattan. Mm-hmm. And next Thursday, which I guess is April 2nd, is the 411 Listener League online draft. So I have one auction done, two auctions to go, one draft to go.
Okay. All right.
And I will talk about those incessantly because that's what I know best, my own teams.
And as always, thanks to you, the fans, for listening, sending in your Twitter questions. But most importantly, thank you to the other side
of the glass.
Of the glass. We will see you, I think we will see you next week.
I look forward to
it. On the MLB.com Fantasy 411.